Hey, comedy fans, welcome to another edition of the Comedy at the Carlson Cast. I'm your host, my name is Vinny, and joining me today in studio for episode 164, it's Morgan Murphy. Today's episode is brought to you by our good friends at Three Heads Brewing, the makers of Rochester's most delicious beer. Remember, folks, drink responsibly, do good things, and always be kind. And also by Comedy at the Carlson's satellite open mic every Sunday at Boulder Cafe and Lounge at 100 Alexander Street in Rochester. Sign-up starts at 6:30 p.m. The show starts at 7. Now let's talk to Morgan. Good afternoon, Carlson casters. My guest today has been performing stand-up comedy since she was 18 years old. She's been a writer on shows like Abbott Elementary and Two Broke Girls. You may know her from John Oliver's New York stand-up show or her Netflix special, Irish Goodbye. You may have also seen her many times on late-night television. Please welcome to the show Morgan Murphy. Good morning, Morgan.
Good morning.
Welcome Good morning. To the Carlson.
Jack, you're on TV.
I forgot Jack's intro.
I still call it TV.
I forgot Jack's intro. He has been a puppy for roughly 8 years.
8 years. This is his first appearance on any sort of a podcast, really any media other than, I mean, he's appeared on my Instagram.
Sure.
He's made guest appearances on my Twitter.
It's a celebrity dog.
Yeah, he's done a few. He's dropped in on other people's Instagrams, but I think this is his first time on any sort of a you know.
Well, welcome to the Carlson cast, Jack the Influencer. Jack, he's all over the social media.
Yeah, he is. He went viral in a tweet once. That he doesn't know that.
I have three dogs, and I don't know if any of them would be sitting there that still that well behaved during this.
He's okay, guy. He's all right.
Jack is all right.
He never typically travels, but we had a couple weeks with some family before I got here. So I think he's other than driving to a gig, he's never flown to a gig.
Ah,
this is a lot of firsts.
So this is not your first time at the club, though. This is your second time. You came through town with Doug Stanhope.
I did.
When we first opened.
Yeah.
Right. I have a poster of you in here.
Yeah. Who drew that? I always want to give that artist credit, and I wish if anybody likes, you know, has seen that poster. I really always like that. I came through with Doug. I forgot that I had been here. That sounds like I was inebriated. I wasn't. I was, but that's not why I forgot.
Sure.
I was featuring for Doug on the road, and when I don't have any direct connection to where I'm going or who's booking, it's just you get in a car, you show up, you do a show. So
absolutely.
There's a lot of places where I go, I was there with somebody else, but I didn't do any of the booking. So it was just a city and a club and a hotel. And that's what I remember.
And then when you look at it, you go, oh, that place.
Yes.
Yeah.
So I was telling people, I've never been to Rochester. What's it like? I truly had space. And then I got here. I was like, oh, I love this club.
Yeah.
It was a positive memory.
We're glad to have you back
Thank
here.
Thank you.
Now, Morgan, I've been doing a lot of reading about you this week and watching videos. And
all the novels that have been published. Thank
yes.
you. Appreciate it.
I really loved that one about the paths less traveled.
Yes,
it was really
yes,
deep.
Yes, that was me. The footprints, that poem.
Yep.
That's me.
It turns out Morgan was carrying you the whole time and nobody realized it.
Sisyphus, that whole story, that's about me. Oh, there's a lot of stuff people haven't.
Yeah. It's prolific work.
Thank you.
But I just have to ask you this question. I've met a lot of performers who started very young.
Yes.
When you're 18 years old and you're going to approach stand up, what do you talk about when you're 18? Like what was the angle that you took for your first set at 18 years old to do comedy?
Oh gosh. Well, I mean, first of all, it was so different. I mean, it feels like it was 100 years ago just because it was pre-social media and
sure.
it was sort of very much done in this what now feels like an abyss. It was just your friends and you and you're driving around and no one's really other than maybe taking a video of themselves to document something. There's no sort of record of it. So at the time there was stuff about being 18.
Uh-huh,
There was stuff about being like a virgin. I was a virgin. So it was sort of, well, that's different than probably other people on the show. So I think I did a joke about thinking like saying that sex was a fad and I was the only one that was going to be cool, like when it was all said and
that's
done.
Hysterical.
Something
that's a
like
great
that.
Angle.
You know, smoking pot. Like one of my first jokes that got like a laugh was like I said, I'm going to read something out of my notebook and you tell me if I was high when I wrote it.
Okay.
And I'd open my notebook and, you know, real slow and just, and then and, you know, kind of do a, I was so nervous, I still am, that I sort of lean into being nervous a little bit.
Yeah.
As opposed to try to not be nervous, which is impossible. And then so, no, say, yeah, tell me if I was high when I wrote this, open my notebook and just read very slowly, like, oh my God, I am so high right now. Like it was all kind of very definitely one-liners and not much conversational stuff.
Sure. Yeah. So you wrote joke jokes.
I wrote joke jokes.
And you did a bit that I would call that a bit. A little bit of a bit.
Finding bits, you know, doing bits, doing jokes. You know, trying to find jokes you think are original, but really with no experience other than taking in, you know, stand up on TV and stuff when you grow up. And for me, I was such a unbearable nerd about like reading. I read right. joke books from like the 30s and stuff. Like, and I was just really into the way words sounded and stuff. So I was that kind of person. But, you know, admittedly, at the time, I probably did jokes that had been done for decades that I didn't know, or some version of them, you know.
I've heard, we just did a competition, an amateur competition here, and I heard a lot of jokes that I have heard many times.
Oh yeah, it's the irony is like I don't know if I'm just seeing more young people because of obviously the proliferation of the internet, all that stuff, but I find it so funny that, I mean, even when Twitter was new and it was like, oh, I'm going to put a joke out there, like I should Google the joke and see if it's been done. Like there was so much, I get so paranoid about someone ever thinking I stole a joke. Like that would be my biggest fear in the world. You could accuse me of like anything else, but I'm like stealing a joke would be, I'm still, there's a handful of people who call each other. Has anyone done this? And someone has to have done this.
Yeah.
So I find it funny that it happens, seems to happen more, or there's just more people doing comedy when like almost everything that's been done is there to find. It's so, it's like anything, there's a little bit of a detachment from the past. Like, oh, nothing happened until, you know, I discovered it.
Right.
But it's everything you're saying something on or performing something on is the same exact device that you could find literally anything on. Like it's strange to me. You just move your thumb to the left and you can go, oh, that's been done.
The lesson is maybe Google it before you do it on stage.
Yeah. I mean, I just thought of a joke once that, and by the way, everyone, it's always going to happen. I just think it's like funny when there's, there's a lot of people who are really, who do care about that stuff. And then the idea that you just wouldn't care at all is the part where I go, that's where I just detach from you as far as my thought. But I Googled one joke once and the words, I'll do like different words in one joke, the like exact word order. It was one reference on all of Google said one time. And it was, Samuel. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like, so I texted him, I go, you were the only reference on all of Google of you wrote this joke. Like it's just when one thing comes up on Google, it's very strange. And it happened to be one person.
That is wild. That's different.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever seen that happen.
No. And it was, I was happy and mad.
Well, speaking of other people's material and being mad, you brought up stealing. So I have to ask you, You have a very interesting video online that you posted, and I got to give you a lot of credit.
Context. What's the year?
Well, the video is of you, a set from 2003, with some split screens with Carlos Mencia's doing.
Sorry, my dog is choking right now.
Yeah, well, I said Carlos Mencia. Your dog didn't react well. In 2007, doing one of his specials, doing your joke verbatim.
Yes.
Like. Verbatim.
Yeah, that was the joke was. It's so funny because this it's like the thing you make in 30 seconds that you go there was a whole big again pre kind of what we think of now as social media, so So, yeah, 2003, I was, what is 17, 23, 27, yeah. I don't even, what is 2003?
We're the same age. So, okay. 2003, I'm thinking early 20s, we'll say.
21, 22, yeah. So, it was very young. And there was this, I think what obviously would have been a bigger thing now, just within comedy, was people accusing, a group in comedy accusing Carlos Mencia of stealing material. Mm-hmm. And so the kind of one of the first, you know, as far as I remember, kind of stand up call outs on YouTube things was, here's my joke, here's the joke that somebody did after me that mm-hmm. they stole from me, you know, compare the two. So I thought it would be funny to watch. And I actually didn't think it's funny because part of me is like, oh, I didn't really accuse anyone of stealing. I thought it'd be funny to take Mencia's special, who people were accusing of stealing, mm-hmm. and then verbatim write it down on cue cards, part mm-hmm. of it, and then do it myself, mm-hmm. and then post a video as if he stole everything from me, mm-hmm. word for word, mm-hmm. including referring to himself as Carlos. Right.
So you basically trolled everybody and did the reverse of that video.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it was just like a joke with kind of no victims, which is like a little bit, I'm never trying to be like mean to someone, sure. you know, like I just, also, even that, like in hindsight, a lot of the stuff I'd say, if I don't have a lot of like regrets, but most of them involve like saying something mean about somebody else. I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, that was mm-hmm. kind of like, why did I didn't need to do that.
Right.
Or jumping on board sort of a bandwagon of like, we all hate this person now. And I'm like, yeah, I'm cool. And they're not and whatever. Like I, you know, so that I always look back at that. But that bit was funny because it's just the comments were very like kind of telling for even what the internet was going to become, because everyone took their own thing out of it. And like, if anything, yeah, it was like a jab at Carlos, I get, because it was like the material I was doing was very silly for me, but they're just, everyone has taken every side in the replies, including wanting to kill me, which is, you know, I thought that was that seemed excessive, but you know, many years later on the internet, I'm like, oh, that seems par for the course.
So when people watch it now and they don't understand it, do you feel bad?
No.
Good.
No, because I, you know, I made every effort to, not even that. First of all, I made every effort. In the day I made it with 3 minutes, went to the UCB, I think that was right, like brand new, that was brand new in LA at the time, handed out some cue cards and read off of them.
Right.
And then the prelude thing at the top says like, I think I says I shot mine in like you know 1952 or something, you know, I right. exaggerated a lot of numbers so that it clearly couldn't be real. And even then the responses, it should have educated me more, because at the time I was like, people really, they're calling me out for like, how could he have stolen her material if there weren't even video cameras when she said, like, weird rationale, like hyper literal deconstruct, that I was like, this is insanity. But actually that's like what everything is now. So I find it to be kind of funny and telling and interesting.
After hearing your side on it, I can't really call it like a troll thing, but it kind of is a troll thing.
It is a troll thing. Yeah. It's a little like, it's, you know, I'm like not that comfortable making people upset. So, and I say that as somebody who like very hypocritically will say like, I'll write roast jokes, but I can't tell them.
Right.
So there's definitely a little like manipulation, I think, on my side to protect myself from like being cruel.
Sure.
But I'm certainly guilty of having like cruel thoughts or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of, how do you just keep sharpening something until you can't get... Like, I think certain people, I just watched Bill Burr specials, like there's certain people who are like so great just organically at making such a clear point that if you get mad at it, it's like a cell phone. It's like if you got mad right. at them for telling a joke, they've crafted the joke so perfectly and in such a way that you being upset does nothing but say something negative about yourself.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I'm really, I just am kind of into that, I wouldn't even say approach. That sounds a little bit too methodical, but like, I just like when it works out that way because it just means, oh, you made something sharp enough to just be right, and to just be funny,
yeah.
And not necessarily completely lean on like some subjective opinion or whatever. So,
yeah, honestly, to me, whenever a comedian can say something that makes you stop and reevaluate yourself,
yes.
That's a joke.
Yes.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's like when people go, well,
it's
he's
more
right.
Than a
like
joke.
They're, oh, well, you know what? She's not wrong. Like, it is a little bit the epitome of, like, you know, comedy sort of being truth or whatever
yeah.
You want to. Sometimes I can get, like, a little bit amorphous about it, but it is just like, I just like being goofy. You know,
sure.
I just like jokes. I like being silly, but, you know, I also try, like, if I have something to say, I'm like, well, how can I say that as a joke
right.
without, I don't know, kind of watering down what I'm saying or also just changing how I feel. Like, I don't want to lie to people about how I feel.
Yeah.
You know, so there's all these, I don't know, I go through a lot of little hoops in my head, but.
Well, you do, obviously, you're a writer.
Yeah.
You write all the time and you have to constantly be writing material. And I wanted to talk to you about writing material for yourself versus writing material for other people. What do you find easier and what do you think is the harder skill?
Oh, man. I mean, I don't think a lot of things are harder to different people. Like, I really am, like, a believer in the sound special. It's not at all. Like that just, like, we all have these, like, wildly, infinitely different brains that do a ton of stuff very differently and see everything. I think that's, like, I think that's, like, a big part of why everyone's been screaming at each other so much is other than the five things that we, you know, vehemently disagree on. Like, there's a lot of just misunderstanding of, like, someone says something and someone else takes it hyper-literally, then someone replies to that sarcastically, then somebody replies to that literally, then it's this, like, epic. So I just think,
yeah.
For me, like, what's easier for me is just probably maybe hard for somebody else, and what's hard, you know, what's easier to somebody else is just immensely difficult for me. So I don't have, writing for other people is always easier for me because there's, like, you don't know what they're kind of, oh, I wouldn't say that is, you know, you can
right.
kind of guess. So like I've written, you know, a lot of scripts and stuff with six characters in it and I can get that done in a week. But like one joke for me, it's harder for me to figure out what that is.
Is there part of it?
You can just decide, like, what's that?
Is there part of it where you say, okay, well, I would never say that, but you know, here we go. It's good for this character.
Yeah,
and then for
I mean,
you have to be
vice
very
versa.
Discriminating.
Like, I've done that. I've taken jokes that I've, like, written for a character and been like, that's just me.
Yeah.
I can do that. But, yeah, I think part of why I like just writing comedy and writing characters that say funny things is that it's just, you know, yeah, there's a little bit, there are fewer restrictions as far as, I mean, again, it depends what kind of comedy you do or what
sure.
you want to do. So like, I don't just like whip out the paper and say,
right.
How about this? How about this? How about this? I try to think about, I don't know. I gotta be honest. Like I still to this day don't, I couldn't describe like why or who or like stuff about me. I just know,
you just know your voice.
Yeah, if I even do, who knows? I don't know. I'm sort of like my own work in progress, and then everything else is, you know. I think also I've been, and I say lucky. A lot of people want to be the boss. Like I like having a boss. I
right.
like having a little bit of, not just somebody else's eyes on something, but like the freedom to throw out a bunch of stuff, and then somebody else. In sort of a little bit more usually of a corporate setting, which is just sort of, you know, necessary if you want to, you know, get
right.
paid for your work, or has been up until, recently is like, they sort of decide. So I like those walls. I like parameters and
okay.
things like that. But just so I can just have fun within them and go. It's the same reason I like a deadline. It's like, I won't get anything done, but if you tell me I got to get done by Friday, I can do it, you know? So, easier, harder is it comes more slowly to me
right.
writing for me, and then I just like writing for other people. I like the puzzle of it. I like that some people are, and arguably you'd say, okay, well, these people, by people, I mean characters in this show that were created to be kinds of people, some of them more caricatures or whatever, but
Right.
I like thinking like, okay, a person who doesn't tell jokes, how would they be funny? You know, a
Right.
person who does tell jokes, how would the person who hates everything be funny? How would the person who likes everything be funny? So I really like just those scenes and that dialogue and how like different kind of people interact
It
in
is
a
a
room
puzzle.
together.
It
Yeah.
is a puzzle.
Yeah,
That's
that's like
interesting.
my f I really enjoy that, and I even like writing, I mean, even like I love writing, you know, people who are not funny. I like writing just dialogue.
Sure.
I'd say if I'm weak at anything, it's like story structure, and that's a huge part. So that's often something I need help with, or just appreciate help and input with.
Right.
And there are people who are like incredible at stories and can't write jokes, and you're just everyone. That's kind of cool too. I love the collaborative
It takes a
process.
team.
Yeah.
So let me ask you
Yeah.
about this because I find writing for television to be really interesting, and you had the opportunity to write for one of the biggest shows over the last 10 years. You were a writer for the Roseanne reboot, is that
Oh
right?
yeah.
That's interesting to me
Yeah.
because, number one, that show has a tradition of amazing writing. They had some of they had Martin Mull in there writing, they
Yeah.
had obviously Roseanne writing, Sandra Bernhardt. They had amazing people writing on that
Yeah.
show originally. And then when they bring it back, they bring in Norm Macdonald. They have you. They have some great people. Whitney Cummings working on this thing. What was that experience like? And was there a lot of pressure compared to doing other shows going in to do that reboot?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly took it because it was it was probably my favorite show growing up, you
I'm with
know?
you. Yeah.
And then as I even got older and kind of older grow older older, you know, latter part of growing up, early part of been grown, I like was like, "Oh, that's a tremendously written show. Like just it's really p perfect in certain ways." And even like the imperfections are perfect. Like there's everything about it. I'm really
Yeah.
into just even the sets and everything, acting down to every. So I was like, of course, yeah. I think this is a tremendous idea, and was thrilled to do it. And in fact, like you know, it was one of my favorite shows to write on. Like because we wrote them all, and then shot them all, then sort of came the implosion, you
The
know.
incident,
So,
sure.
and by then I was already on something else. So it was a very strange experience to have that all, almost everything that was very positive and just creatively wonderful. And Norm was my office mate, so that was just, you know, I'd be absolutely lying if I didn't say I showed up and, you know, Norm and Morgan on the wall, that wasn't like an incredibly cool
I'm
moment for
smiling
me.
thinking about
Yeah,
that.
it
Yeah.
just, you know, it there is nothing better for me than the little moments where, oh my gosh, somebody that I really admired and really like respected creatively, like not only knows who I am, but maybe like acknowledges me if they compliment. Oh my God, it gets better and better. I compliment, you know. So I'm just a real I it's those little huge things that
Sure.
just never stop being incredibly cool. So
Well, can I
that was
ask,
tremendous.
like,
Yeah,
when you find out that she did you meet Norm before this? Did you
I
know
had
him
met him.
before?
Yeah. We
Okay.
had we were, you know, I think respectful, you know, I don't know what you can never quite say exactly, you know, how Norm was, you know, personally feeling, but I was always obviously tremendously you know he yeah he I think he'd hate if I said in awe. I just had so much respect for him
Right.
in a few different ways. So you know, and he knew who I was and was always nice and complimentary. But
How would you describe his writing process as opposed to yours? Was it different? Did you find yourselves like, oh, I do this too?
well,
Did you?
he and I and Wanda Sykes, we came in part time, so we were kind of, you know, everybody else was kind of doing a lot of the kind of creating the stories, and then I think, you know, more or less we were there for like responding to that as,
Yeah.
you know, but he's just so funny. He's so, sometimes he'll say stuff in response to the writing for, you know, 30 seconds or a minute. And I think he secretly knew, but and it was, once he ends, it's like his response to the writing. Everyone's like, yo, we wrote that down, right? We wrote down what he just said about, because that was the real thing. So, you know, and then there's just nothing funnier than when he doesn't like something, because it's, you know, I think with Norm, you get, again, this is totally my opinion, and I'm really hesitant to speak of anybody else, let alone somebody who's no longer with us. So, you know, this is the part of the podcast they cut out and then go right into the, the context, the setup of I might be wrong, but, and then, but I think that, like, you don't get the Norm that feels like the brave kind of comedy hero without the Norm that upsets you sometimes, because it's all from, if a person is going to say something that sort of sneaks up and is especially honest in a way that's like thrilling, they're probably that way all the time. They're just incredibly, you know, that comes from a place of personal integrity, right? So a lot of the people that I think are, I would never say that my stand-up is brave on any level, but a lot of the people that I go, oh, that somebody said something brave, are also people I think that probably there's a likelihood they'll upset you sometime, because if they're only saying something based on their own personal integrity, then that means like nothing else is affecting them. Not if I say this, it will, this will happen. If I don't say that, you know. So with Norm, like, he's just so honest, and it was just so fun, you know, to be in a room with somebody who had nothing but the comedy in mind.
Right.
And that's how I feel all the time, but it's not how I react all the time, right? Because sometimes you're like, well, I'm the lowest on the totem pole here, right?
Are you saying that sometimes his constructive criticism may have felt harsher?
No, it's hilarious because it's so honest that it's like, imagine a whole room talking for 5 minutes, you know, just what about this? What about this? This? And so, oh yeah, this, and then that, and then that, and then that. And it's this enthusiastic buildup. And then Norm just like, okay, but we're not going to like do any of that, right? Like, it's just this flat, clear, like, yeah, but not any of that stuff that you just said, right? Like,
yeah, that was a good chat, that was, but
just,
we're done with
yeah,
that.
Yeah, it's just not, it's not a, it's the funniest, kind of most honest, and yet also polite, strangely polite, a polite presentation of, that was terrible. That is just, you can't.
That's about as insulting as Canadians get.
I love it. I love it. So he was just lovely. He was really, and he's like, you know, not to go into like personal conversations, but like, it was just, it's always so nice to talk to someone who, you know, I've always felt like, even, I was just spent 2 weeks with my family, and like, they just think I'm a nut job, you know? Sure. And it's just funny to like talk to someone where the thing you care about isn't weird to somebody else, and for me that's like comedy, right? So to care about comedy is to a lot of people strange, and to want to talk about certain elements of it, why something's whatever, it's just, that's a kind of deconstruction, or just even like the obvious, well, that's funny, that's not, why is that the case? Like, I don't want to have like big nerdy esoteric conversations. That's not my thing. I just like it. Like, so if you can't change the way your brain works, then you find somebody else who like doesn't think that's that weird, then that's cool. And then on top of it, I just, obviously his comedy has been, was everything. It's just so cool.
I think of it kind of like, the analogy I use for people is like car guys, you know, people who are really into cars. Everybody could see a nice car and go,
yeah,
that's a nice car. I really like that car. But you're not going to sit there and spend all day talking about the intake valves and the carburetors and all that stuff. Comedians will all day long. They will sit there and deconstruct a joke.
Yes.
And most people just go, oh, that was funny.
Yes.
Yeah. It doesn't end there. It does not end there, people.
Yeah. I think it's also like, especially you know, last 5-10 years, even to talk to somebody who is interested in, like, not cultural shifts from, like, the perspective of, like, oh, this is on TV, but just the way people change and language changes and what, and even, and then you can get into, which I think Norm was very open about, being a little bit more, you know, philosophical in his case, even, you know, I mean, I think he was, you know, religious to an extent, but just talking about bigger things, but not making them so, there was no pretense, you know right. what I mean? It was just a lot of like, oh, we can have all these talks while, I mean, I got rid of the two couches. We had two couches. You got one couch, two desks.
Okay.
So we were, I kept streaming sports on my laptop because I'm like obsessed with sports. That was, I think, the other thing. I didn't even think about that.
Oh yeah, you two probably got along famously.
Yeah, it was
that.
Just like, oh God, well, what do you want to do at lunch? Like, of course, like I could stream a game. We could put on like literally any baseball game that's close or something. So, so instead of two desks, one couch, we had one of the desks taken out. We had two couches, one desk, and I brought a TV in, and we just put the TV on the desk. So everyone else was like at a desk
working,
and we both had usually him with a notepad, me with a laptop, like couches, you know, and a TV, some candy. He liked candy.
I love candy.
Yeah,
Morgan.
He quite liked candy. So it was just, you know, it was. You know, look at that. I'm a grown single lady with a lot of interests that people would consider sort of, you know, either niche or even like masculine or whatever. So to just kind of totally be myself in an office, in a shared office, you know, was nice.
Not only that, you're in there with like a legend who's like, nobody's going to walk in there and say, Norm, get rid of the TV.
Yeah. Yeah, well, yeah, and honestly, at some point, you kind of, I do feel like I've baby-stepped my way into taking certain privileges at work where
I love
never
this. Tell me more. Tell me more.
I just, as a young person, I never would have, you know, taken those liberties to be
sure.
Like, I'm going to put a TV on my desk. I think at some point, you're like, okay, well, they hired me for a specific reason. I'm not necessarily trying to prove myself. I've done that. I even have maybe done that here a little, and you find those places you can go like,
yeah.
Okay, I think I can bring in that stuffed animal or whatever the heck makes you happy.
I get a little leeway.
Yeah, a little bit of leeway to, hey, like, you know, I don't think I hung anything up in an office for a couple of years. Like, yeah. You're just like, oh gosh, I hope I'm doing well enough to get
I hope
a
you
paycheck.
Didn't hang
yeah.
anything in that office.
No, we had his and hers, Hanukkah stockings.
Nice.
You know, it was just a little something.
A little fun.
And a electric menorah. I think that was the time of year that I had. And I brought in a few things, you know, he's not a, but it was nice, you know,
that's such a cool story.
Yeah, we would. I mean, you know, it just streaming sports is Norm's so great because he's so smart, but he also is like so tech backwards that like he thought it was like magical that I could get any game on the television at any time. You know, just how was it without the cables and the? You know.
He, I can only imagine what it would be like watching baseball with that guy.
It's fun. I mean, look, the whole thing.
Was he a just for my own edification here, I don't know how interesting this is to everybody else. Was he a sit there quietly and watch the game, or was he commenting?
I mean, mostly we were pretty quiet. Like, yeah, I can't. I mean, again, like one thing I can't imagine there'd ever be a reason to say is like, oh, this is like any conversation we had. Anything that was like super super interesting I probably wouldn't repeat like ever, you
certainly.
Know, but you know, verbatim I'd tell you like, oh, he was a, you know, fascinating guy, and I certainly knew him less than you know most of the people close to him in his life who had a rich history with him,
sure.
of course, but you know, common thread being that everyone who even knew him that long, there was always something you didn't know, you know, was,
yeah.
there was always, so yeah, it was just, yeah, a lot of cool, yeah, quiet, and then pretty typical sports responses to certain actions, and
okay.
you know, yeah, it was very, very standard. It's just, yeah, there were times where I looked and I was like, oh, this is, This is, I like this.
This is quite comfortable and nice.
That is the thing where people, I think some people are like, oh, well, writing, you could just go be a writer, or you don't want to do stand up. Like, no, I like writing. Like, I would have rather been in that room, you know, punching up a scene or whatever than on a show. That's just me. Like, so it's just funny. I find it funny when people presume you either fell backwards into writing, like, oh, that was your backup plan, or you picked it because it was more lucrative, whatever it was. It's like, some people like to write.
People like to write.
Yes.
Get off her back. People like to write. People like to write.
Yeah.
So, Morgan, you are doing four more shows here at the Carlson this weekend. You get your tickets right now at carlsoncomedy.com. Last night was a lot of fun. And I just wanted to ask you about this because I'm glad you're doing well.
I looked like the whole time. Nobody told me. It's fine.
Oh,
I forgot to put makeup on this morning.
I just caught myself in the monitor. I just got scared.
Didn't. I always say I forgot to put makeup on. I just chose to not put makeup on. I didn't like leave the room and go, uh-oh, makeup. I forgot. I just didn't do it.
Yeah.
You're supposed to, though.
No, you don't have to. No,
people are supposed to put makeup on, is what I've been told.
I didn't get the memo.
Okay.
I didn't get the memo on that one. I say, do you.
Okay.
You retired from comedy unofficially a few years ago. Is that true?
I did, yeah. I retired from like every... Well, yeah. I got like I had an illness. I was at Modern Family. I was writing in Modern Family, and I kind of the end of that, got sick, and basically it was very apparent within a matter of months. Like, this was not going to get better, and... Ultimately, obviously, clearly it did. But yeah, I had a end of 2019, middle end of 2019, started, just got, had a basically terrible throat and palate and inner ear, just a bunch of pain in my head. And then it turned out I had this, like, after many months of medical chaos, I had like this incredibly rare neurological condition. And then it was like more, what's that?
I was going to say, you won the unlucky lottery.
I won the unlucky lottery. And that was like a year of, uh-oh. And then, you know, kind of fear, and then really sad acceptance, like, oh, this is your story. But then the pandemic came, which kind of allowed me to do it in kind of just be completely private and isolated about it.
Interesting.
And then I had these kind of treatments that gave me like a few weeks a time of kind of at least being able to like act cool
and
you
feel
know.
A little better.
Well, yeah, like on phone, like just kind of not, I wasn't writing. It just, yeah, I'd retired from everything, and I knew it was bad when I turned down the next job, when I said, oh, I can't work. And I can't work because I know I can't like promise anybody that I'll be fine on any given day. And then, you know, got worse and worse. And then, as like by mid pandemic, I was like, okay, well, that's my story. Not mid 2020. Sorry. I was like, that's my story. That's how it went. Like it really does happen that way. People tell you like, oh, and tomorrow could be a different, you know, everything could go away.
Yeah.
And I assumed it would. And then this is a little bit over a year after I started getting sick, and, you know, almost a year into my diagnosis, they kept looking for the cause of it, 'cause it was all these nerves that go to my tongue, my throat. Like, it was like the stuff, you know, it was like, yeah. I couldn't promise, you know, I did a headlining weekend in November of 2019 in Portland, and then realized like, oh, I can't do this. I can't, you know, it was difficult to speak and swallow and stuff. So I just ended up, you know, quitting. And then I thought I'd keep writing, but then it's on all this neurological medication, which slows you down, slows your mind down a little bit. So that was incredibly frustrating. So I was kind of just done, and I thought, you know, I love Bisbee, Arizona. It's a little, you know, a little less expensive. So I was like, okay, and when this pandemic wraps up, whenever, you know, I think we were all in a little bit of denial, in 2020. I was like, well, sell my house, go to Arizona, and, you know, spend, you know, hemorrhage all my money on this medical stuff until I don't have any money anymore, because that's, you just start to go like, it doesn't matter.
Right.
Nothing matters. Money doesn't matter. All that stuff. And then in August, September-ish of 2020, so a year post, you know, getting sick and then diagnosis, they found what was causing it. And like my fourth MRI, they found that, because they thought they were looking for something, you know, much more clear, but they just found that all these nerves in my brainstem were, so they, it was the same diagnosis it always been, but they just found the thing causing it. So they were like, hey, we found the compression where all these nerves are being crushed in your brainstem that go to your, you know, your left side. And they said, we can do, you know, brain surgery, which isn't what they call it. They, you know, a craniotomy with microvascular decompression. And then you have all these second opinions and things. And so I, you know, did that second opinion thing for a couple of days and just went into, walked in solo to UC
have a
San
craniotomy.
Diego. Yeah, and shout out to my neurosurgeon, who might not want to be shouted out, but he did it, and I mean, literally, I have a lot of weird residual issues, but they're all weird. They're not horrific, and that's one night and day.
I'm really happy to hear that you're able to go back and live the life that you wanted to live, and that everything didn't just like end for you. Like, that's got to be terrifying.
It's just wild. It's, I think more wild is accepting it's over and kind of being told that by like the best ever, you know. People were just like, oh, as I keep telling people, like, if you're going to have something bad, have something rare, because at least, like, crazy rare, because at least then doctors are still like, you know,
I'll fix this.
Well, that's the kind of the bit on stage I do, is like, it's like me with men in my 20s where I was like, give me a try at this one. Like, I can fix him. Like, it is doc. If you're like a rare medical case, it is kind of interesting to see, people a little bit stay motivated. And I had one close friend who really pushed me to keep looking for answers. But you know, he knows who he is. Very grateful to you, sir. And so it was just this wild experience of that. It still doesn't feel real. To see, you know, it is surreal.
Like, after a moment where you feel like you kind of surrendered to it, and like you're just like, okay, I'm gonna go to Arizona, I'm gonna go live it up, and then to find out you're like, wait, what? I'm good.
Well,
I could be
good. that's because it never was good. I mean, even the idea of how I would have to live was like, okay, well, you take the moments so that you're not in pain, you know. And to be totally honest, like, not to get like too dark, but I was like, what if I can't like speak? Like, what there were like, how bad does this get? Like, what if I can never? Because I would get, you know, I had pain from talking, and then, you know, so you do think of all the what ifs, the most extreme what ifs. And but the idea of like a moment of, you know, just a moment where you're not thinking, half a second where you're not thinking about it, is like this incredible piece. So it was really bizarre it's bizarre because I can't even register what that, I know I hit for a while, hit that like complete acceptance, something zen about it, even in like the horror. And then being out of that for a year, and I was like, I can't touch that anymore. And that's like, actually, that part's a little bit upsetting, because you're like, oh, I wish I was, you know, I wish I was as centered and decent a human being in my head as I was at that moment. But then you get better, and you're, you know, I laugh because I called my doctor when I took my first job after I thought I wouldn't work, which was a full year after I had worked before. And it was just on, I was just on Zoom, but it was like, I mean, a job I love, but I just go, this neurosurgeon went to school for like 12 years. I call him, I go, I'm working on Beavis and Butthead. Like, you sent me back into, thank you for saving my, you know, my at least a functional life. Thank you for giving it back to me. I appreciate it. I'm going to put it to good use and go tell some fart jokes.
I really hope that doctor had a good sense of humor. It was like, oh, Beavis and Butthead, great. And he wasn't like, Morgan, Beavis and Butthead. It's very sophomoric and immature. And we've gotten you this great second chance at life.
No, and it'd be great
if you don't continue to corrupt the youth.
I send him when I'm like, oh, I'm going to do my first time for an hour. You know, my first hour in Spokane wasn't just my first headlining gig since 2019, like 2.5 years. It was my first time speaking for an hour, wow. Which I didn't even kind of register. And since Portland in 2019. So, you know, this is my first time really speaking this much about all of this. So it's just been I think every time I talk about it, which I try not to, you know, you try not to be like, oh, I'm just going to live in my story over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Like that part's a little.
And I can understand why that would be a little bit weird. And I wanted to bring it up though, just mm-hmm. because I know it's still kind of fresh for you, but I wanted to tell you, it's amazing, and I'm very happy for you. Like,
hey, thank you.
I really am, because that I know that your voice is an important thing, and when you've spent your entire career creating and writing, the thought of that going away, and then being able to come back triumphantly, which is what you're doing. You have triumphed over this thing.
This is triumph.
This is triumph.
Half-filling rooms all over this country.
You have the opportunity to perform in front of half filled rooms across the country.
Yes.
Triumph, baby.
Yeah, and I like my work. I like the shows I'm writing. I think I've actually become more annoying the less ambitious I've become, which is rare. That's a rare skill.
How did you do that?
I'm a little bit more honest about my feelings out loud, I think. I think that's it. And I don't know if that's always... and also my, like, wonders. And, you know, I'm just a little bit more like, I don't know, this is just exactly who I am. And I'm exactly the same, just it's just more of what I liked is the stuff I'm doing and talking about and, you know, a little bit. I mean, again, I'm not... I mean, I like a bunch of stuff that's probably, you know, whatever, capitalistic, materialistic, problematic, all the things. But ultimately, like, I get giddy when I just have a nice interaction with, like, my barista guy. You know what I mean? Like, I just am really super deeply into small shit and just what makes me happy in the moment. And so I just spend a lot more of my focus... I always did. I just never talked about, you know, it's that stuff where you just go like, oh, I really like having chicken nuggets during The Bachelor, whatever your thing is, you know,
sure.
I don't do that. But I just like, I now I'm just like, isn't it nice how when you have chicken nuggets with you? But like, I just talk about it, which I think is annoying. But I think it was always a little bit annoying. So now I'm a little more annoying. But I, you know, at least like honest, I try to be honest.
Folks, you could see the honest. And self-described kind of annoying.
Well, a lot of my Morgan jokes Murphy. Are like tiny little lies. I will tell people that. They're, you know, that's when I'm not. People are like, you really did that? No, it's clear that that was a complete, like, I mean, jokes are like a nice little way to lie. But...
Yeah, they're jokes, people. Relax.
Unless they're not.
Unless they're not.
Yeah.
Come check out Morgan tonight here at Comedy the Carlson. There's 4 more shows, 2 tonight, 2 tomorrow. You get your tickets at carlsoncomedy.com. And Morgan, where can people follow you these days?
They can follow me on Twitter or on, don't do that. They can follow me on, don't follow me on Twitter, Instagram.
Great.
You know, I usually announce on the Instagrams where I'm doing my shows.
All right. Well, follow Morgan Murphy on Instagram and come see her this weekend. You won't regret it. We will be back next week with another episode. Until then, act right, Rochester, and we will see you at the show. Thank you for being awesome and watching another episode of the Carlson Cast. Don't forget we're streaming live on Facebook and YouTube every Friday morning. You could also follow us on social media on Twitter and Instagram at CarlsonCast. You can listen anytime on iTunes, Google Play, and we're now available on Spotify. You should also check out an amazing app called Laughable. And on the Laughable app, you can connect to your favorite comedians in a way you never thought you could before. Download it in the App Store and visit CarlsonCast.com for information on more shows. And don't be a jerk. Rate and review.